glories to Srila Prabhupada, Namo Vishnu Puraya, Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale, Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityanamine, Namaste Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Vicharana, Visheshwariya, Vadi Vrishichari, Sikhani. Well, yesterday we became aware there was some concern about how much was presented so fast. And so we thought the best thing today is that we open with questions and answers session. Particularly, I think it's particularly important, hoping that you have actually, after the class yesterday, taken the study guide back and read it carefully. And those who are full-time students would have read the seventh chapter, canto one, along with it. So we're particularly interested in getting questions from this chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. But secondarily, if you have questions from other areas of the Bhagavatam, general questions, we can also deal with those too, but we think that was the feedback I was getting. There was a lot of concern about the amount of material that was spoken yesterday. And so we expect you to have questions about chapter 7. So please don't be shy. Yes.
In verse 11 in the purport, Prabhupada suggests that the verse where Sukadeva Goswami mentioned that he readily became a devotee, become dear to devotees. So it seems that Prabhupada suggests that he says both father and son, Vyasadeva and Sukadeva Maharaj, they became dear to Vaishnavas. You mean that Vyasadeva was also Brahmavadi before he was a Bhagavad?
Maharaj, it's just a book. You have the book. Maybe you could repeat your question. What was that about Brahmavadi?
Yeah, that verse says that Sukadeva Maharaj, he became dear to Vaishnava, dear to devotees, after discovering Bhagavatam, before he was a Brahmavadi. The Prabhupada suggests in a purport that also his father, Vedavyasa, his father, also became dear to, just like they changed their mood, their attitude, and he became dear to devotees. So that suggests that Vedavyasa was a Brahmavadi also before he was a Bhagavatam.
Hmm. Why would that suggest?
Because Prabhupada mentions both of them in the same line. The change of Sukadeva Goswami is also mentioned as Vedavyasa having also that change.
Well, one thing is for certain, that when Narada came to visit Srila Vyasadeva, what did he tell him? He said that you haven't gone beyond teaching Brahman realization as the highest goal. So that is chastisement of the spiritual master. So it would appear that Vyasadeva knew, he understood that he hadn't done enough because he was despondent. And Vyasadeva himself is an incarnation of the Lord. So I don't think it would be a proper conclusion to say he was on the level of realization of impersonal Brahman only, but just that he had a difficulty in expressing Krishna consciousness, pure Krishna consciousness in his literatures. Sometimes in preaching, devotees have the same difficulty. You know, we may think that because of the people we are preaching to, they're not ready to accept everything, so we'll only give them this much. But perhaps a more intelligent or more bold preacher may come along who just gets right to the point and cuts through our, you see, we weave some kind of very gradual pattern by which we think we will introduce a little more, a little more, a little more. So Narad Muni, he cut through that and just insisted, you must write Srimad Bhagavatam. You must directly glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. So when we talk of the devotees, then we're talking of the Mahajans, and Narada Muni is Mahajan. So he was definitely not pleased with the work that Vyasadeva had done up to that point. Because as Uttama Shloka, I don't think he's here yet, but when he gave his presentation on that chapter, he nicely pointed out that these words being spoken by Narada to Vyasadeva were sarcastic words, which a spiritual master will sometimes use to straighten his disciple out. Yeah, more to add?
Yeah, basically, concur with Maharaj's point, is that, because you see, thus both the son and the father were completely cognizant of transcendental knowledge in Brahman, and afterwards both of them became absorbed in the personal features of the Supreme Lord. It says, the question as, okay. But, and before that, because this is in context of how Sukadeva Goswami became attracted, so that he mentions here is by associating with by Vyasadeva. Okay. Srila Vyasa was also able to narrate the great epic of Srimad Bhagavatam. By the mercy of Vyasadeva, Srila Sukadeva Goswami was able to grasp the import. The transcendental qualities of the Lord is so attractive that Srila Sukadeva Goswami became detached from being completely absorbed in personal Brahman and positively took up the personal activity of the Lord. So we see as he was attached to the Brahman. Brahman means any devotee is Brahman realized. Like that. That's there. But then, as Maharaj points out, it doesn't mean that they're attached to it. They just are. So he was attached to it as the goal. So that was his identity. But I would say here that Vyasadeva, that wasn't the problem. But when one is on the transcendental platform, then one also a element comes up. It's the nature of the soul, that kindness or compassion. So then when you look at the living entities, conditioned living entities, you see them as transcendental personalities, but you understand that they don't. They see themselves as what they are. Like Prabhupada gives the point, is that it's not the body that's the doctor. It's the soul is the doctor. The soul thinks, I am a doctor. Therefore, the mind has manifest that form. Does that make sense? So because of that, their kindness, then they make arrangements how they can fulfill those needs and desires, and at the same time is gradually take them through to get Krishna conscious. What as Maharaj pointed out, Narad Muni felt that that method of preaching, though it's nice, it engages everybody, there should also be the fast track. Because otherwise, everybody moving on that slow track, people may never get there. You know? It just may not happen. So you have to have the system where you just cut through and just say, all this is nonsense, and you just take shelter of Krishna. Like that. Does that make some sense?
Yeah.
So, being on the Brahman platform doesn't mean that one is an impersonalist. Because Brahma Bhuta is the Brahman platform. That's the definition, is Brahma Bhuta means the for the impersonalist, then that's just called moksha. But the devotees, when they come to the platform of moksha, because they are also simultaneously devotees of the Lord, it's called Brahma-bhuta. It's different. There's a distinction made. So it'll say that the devotee is liberated. It means he's come to Brahma-bhuta. So there's a difference even in the stage of liberation. So does that make some sense? So even there, even if you're taking it that one comes through. And also here, because you're speaking on transcendence, you're not bound by time. So it's not that, you know, Sukadeva was here in the womb, he's an impersonalist. Then by hearing the Bhagavatam by Vyasadeva, then he became, therefore, a personalist. And Vyasadeva was also just shortly before that, also one, and then he became a personalist. The point of being Brahman realized is just sometime in the development of that soul. He was Brahman realized. And then he comes forward. But as we see here as being on his platform, we never hear of him being a Brahmavadi, then becoming. Because actually those who make it to prema, they're coming through the devotional path, you know, through the process of yoga. It means, as far as I know, in the scripture, means it's always mentioned that you can get to the Brahman platform. And it always mentions you get from the Brahman platform to the devotional if you're a Brahmavadi. But I only know of two examples in all the Vedic literatures that talk about someone who is actually situated on the Brahman platform. And that was Sukadeva Goswami and the Four Kumaras. So basically, the concept of becoming a actual Brahmavadi and being actually liberated, I think, is the same kind of Vedic presentation as the heavenly planets is amara, or deathless. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? In other words, no one actually gets there.
Nah.
But it is a possibility. Does that make sense? So we're just talking about every devotee who's a sadhaka will go through the stage of Brahma-bhuta before getting to prema. And so then in this case, then he's also mentioning that Vyasadeva, at some point, it doesn't mean right here, in this pastime, in the, you know, fourth and fifth chapters, is that's where it happened. You know, there it's a matter of, I would say it's that, like what Maharaj is saying, he's overly compassionate to the conditioned souls to the point where they'll miss the point, the conditioned souls. So then, therefore, he's dissatisfied. Otherwise, if he was actually, you know, an impersonalist at that point, he would have been fully satisfied. Just as Sukadeva in the womb, he was fully satisfied. Why even come out? So it's only after he heard the pastimes, then he felt, I wasted my time. You know, I should come out, get association devotees, and discuss the Lord's pastimes. So then he immediately came out and then left. So that would also be an indication that wouldn't have been the case if Vyasadeva was, otherwise he would have been satisfied, because satisfaction is the symptom of the Brahman platform. So he was dissatisfied. That means he wasn't fully satisfied in that he hadn't glorified the Lord like that. Because he knew, otherwise it would be indicated in his works that Krishna was the Supreme Brahman. But he's always talking about him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Is that okay?
In that connection, I have a question to ask you. Can someone explain why Narad Muni would make that remark about Srila Vyasadeva's composition up to that point? Because as I was, when I prepared yesterday's notes, I was looking in the Tattva Sandarbha, and Jiva Goswami was there clearly saying that Srimad Bhagavatam was composed after the other Puranas, after Mahabharata. So there are other Sattva Gun Puranas like Vishnu Purana, in which Vishnu is clearly delineated as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So if Vyasadeva had already completed these literatures, then why would Narada Muni say that? That you have not gone beyond impersonal Brahman in your presentation.
I think it's because of devotional service aspect, because devotional service is not really mentioned in the Shastras, although it's there, but it's not illuminated like that as such. This is devotional service, and this is our aim of life, and the lot towards Krishna, because Vishnu is there, his Supreme Personality of Godhead, but they not say that, the Vedas and Puranas do not really say that he has to be loved with full attention and all this. Things, Radharani's mood and all these things is not mentioned there.
No, that's a good answer. More could be said, but that's a very good start. Yes?
Did the other one is refer to deity as transcendental, or is Vishnu in the material world?
I think Vishnu Puran is transcendental, otherwise Ramanuja wouldn't take it as his main scripture.
Of course, they speak of Vaikuntha, the abode of the Lord. Yes.
I was thinking on this point similarly before I asked this question, because I think of the Padma Purana, which mentions the Ashtakali Lila. But Mahesh Prabhu was pointing out, Rasik Bhakti is not mentioned in any of the Puranas. The Sattvic Bhakti maximum of the Vaikuntha is Sattvic Bhakti.
Yeah.
Just a pinch of pure goodness, but not Garasamadhyam is not nowhere to be found. That's what I keep thinking of.
Okay, these are.
Because they don't mention Krishna specifically?
No, that's actually the fact.
But they do mention Krishna.
No, not Swayam.
The Padma Purana does, definitely. The Ashtakali Lila is described there.
No, but just because it's Ashtakali Lila doesn't mean that it's Swayam Krishna. Because, see, you have many levels of Vrindavan. Because Prabhupada mentions is that there's always a topic. Who's first? You know, I mean, this is before the chicken and egg one. Who's first, Vishnu or Krishna? So, in our line, we understand that Krishna is the original, and from him is expanding Vaikuntha Pati. But in those who are Vaikuntha Vasis, they see Vishnu as supreme, and one of his most wonderful unlimited pastimes are the sweet pastimes of Vrindavan. So you see, even within the Vaikuntha Sampradayas, like Ramanuja's, three of their acharyas, the Alwars, their songs are about Krishna in Vrindavan. And what's the name? Andal, exclusively. Like that, the Shris even joke, they say, Andal was one of you guys. He was ISKCON, you know. She's a Vrindavanwala, right? But if you notice them, then it's also, even they're talking, it's still not Swayam Krishna, right? Because in the pastimes there is different levels of Vrindavan. So there's Braja Vrindavan. That's why the Acharyas specifically say Braja Vrindavan. It is a particular level of Vrindavan. Then you have Ananda Vrindavan, you know, just, or general they call Vrindavan. But there's different levels. So there is Vrindavan, which is Radha Krishna pastimes, but there's still the element of consciousness of opulence. So therefore, when Radharani goes to see Krishna, you know, at the Rasa dance, then she goes in a you know, jeweled airplane with 10 million maid servants to go for the Rasa dance and all these different kinds of things. So these other Puranas are talking about this level. That's what's unique. Lord Chaitanya opened the door to Braja Vrindavan. It's never been opened before. It means one may say, in fact, it came up at one time. Is the Nimbarkas, they will complain that we have just, you know, what do you call it? When you plagiarized their philosophy. They're into Raganuga. They're Radha Krishna worshippers. you know, serving Radharani in Raganuga Bhakti in Vrindavan. And then they will claim that we just took their philosophy and, you know, added in this separation aspect, you know, just to change it and then call it our own. They even at one time approached the Gaudiya Math, said, you guys should pull back and be less prominent. We're going to take you to court that you're speaking our things. You know? And so then I think it was Keshu Maharaj. He says, okay, but you're going to have one problem because your acharya is not mentioned anywhere by name in any scripture anywhere. And then they just kind of bowed their head and left. You know, we all know he's there and accepted, but he's not mentioned. So then they backed out. Because that was 5,000 years ago, Nimbarka. You know? 5,000, yeah. So now the question comes up, then what is the difference? It's already been given. Radha Krishna worship, Raganuga Bhakti, Braja, you know, Vrindavan worship, what's already been given. But it's actually not, because they're always together. Radha Krishna are never separated. It's only a feeling that they're separated, like the example of them is given of Prema Sarovar, where Radha and Krishna are sitting together, but because of some affection, they think the other one's gone, but they're not. So everybody else, in other words, Radha Krishna may experience separation, but the devotees who are around watching the pastime never do. To them, it's just kind of like cute. So that's Ananda Vrindavan. So in Ananda Vrindavan, Radha Krishna are always together, 24/7 in the kunjas. Like that. So it's different. So even it's been, oh, go past Vaikuntha, even we go into Goloka, still Braja Vrindavan has not been given before Lord Chaitanya. He opened the door for that. It's indicated here. These are the pastimes, but Maya covers it, so it can't be seen. That's mentioned, I think in the I'm not sure, Navadvita Mahatmya, I think Lord Chaitanya tells Maya, says, now you can remove the covering where the illusion, where even the great scholars can't understand from these particular shlokas about Lord Chaitanya and about Krishna in their complete surup form. You know, it's just like, what's it, the Bhattacharya? When Lord Chaitanya came, Sarvabhauma, then he understood what the meaning of those verses were. He knew them. He could quote them. He could speak on them. But he didn't know what they meant, really. He didn't know their full meaning until when he met Lord Chaitanya and heard from him, you know, his commentary on the Vedanta. And then I understand what is meant. Does that make any sense?
So to add to that, to
love the Lord means to love Krishna, because Krishna is, well, he's of course Svayam Bhagavan, the original personality of Godhead, but he's revealing himself and those pastimes so that the devotees who are qualified can enter into his association as equals or even superiors. Because to love the Lord means to please Him to the utmost. And this is what we see in Krishna's pastimes as revealed in 10th canto. For example, Prabhupada would say how you can see in Krishna's pastime, Mother Yashoda, she has the Lord in her hand. The Lord has become her child, fully dependent on Him. And then there's that, just to remind us, there's, for example, when Krishna, she suspects that Krishna has been eating dirt and demands that he opens his mouth. So obediently he opens his mouth. And she certainly does see some dirt in there. She sees a whole universe full of many, many planets full of dirt. That's to remind us of who Krishna, that Krishna is actually God. But you see, in it, the Bhagavatam says that when she was seeing the whole universe in Krishna's mouth, then her whole bhava towards Krishna began to change. And she we got into the Aishwarya Bhav instead of Madhura Bhav, and she was thinking, I've been foolish all this time, thinking this child is dependent upon me, that I should feed him, take care of him. What? How stupid could I be? I should be offering my... And as soon as Krishna realized that this is what she was thinking, he just called Yogamaya, and Yogamaya covered it over, and probably said, in explaining this in a lecture, he said, then all Mother Yashoda said to him was, don't do it again.
Which would have a double meaning.
Yeah. Don't eat dirt or don't disturb our rasa. See? So that's only revealed in Srimad Bhagavatam, and that's why David's answer, that the other Puranas don't actually mention Krishna. They mention, just like I can still remember when I was a boy, I happened to find the name Krishna in the dictionary, you know. So Krishna's mentioned in the dictionary, but so what? You know?
It's now a transcendental literature.
You see? And until you come to this point of knowing who Krishna really is, why he's manifesting these pastimes, what he wants from his devotees. This is clear, as Maharaj was speaking of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya made this very clear, that Krishna wants to come into the hands of his devotees. Actually, or as Prabhupada gave a nice example, comparing Lord Narayan to Lord Krishna, he said, yeah, there's the same personality. It's not that we're talking about different personalities of Godhead, but Lord Narayan is like the high court judge in the courtroom. So there everyone's yes, my lord, and treating him very respectfully. And if someone speaks out of turn, he can sentence them, what is that, contempt of court, 30 days in jail. You see? So everyone's trembling in the presence of the judge. But then Prabhupada said, the same person will go home, and there the son, the little boy, will climb on daddy's back, and daddy will ride around the living room like a horse with the little boy on his back. Or mother will, his wife will have some pet name that could never be used in the courtroom, like Poopsie or something. You see, anyone who would address him as Poopsie in the courtroom while he's sitting on the desk.
All rise for the honorable Poopsie.
Would be thrown in jail. But at home, where he feels most comfortable, then he's, you know, coming under the control of those who love him. So that's the real meaning of Krishna Prema. And that's not shown anywhere except Srimad Bhagavatam. And so because it isn't, then everywhere else you look, even in those Puranas where it may be explicitly said that the Supreme Absolute Truth is a personality, there is still room for argument. The Mayavadis can still enter. See, actually, the more close the Mayavadi philosophy seems to come to Vaishnava philosophy, the more dangerous it becomes. There is a certain section among the Mayavadis, I think they're called the Chid Anandis, and they have this doctrine that, yes, we agree with you, Bhagavan Sri Krishna's Swarup is Satchitananda Vigraha. It is not material. It is not material, you know, Prakriti and Sattva Guna. No, it is pure, divine, transcendental, spiritual nature. But you see, he only shows this when he descends as avatar. Then, because we are in this personal conception, we're foolish, we're deluded by Maya. So Brahman is so kind that when Brahman descends, he takes a personal form of Brahman energy and shows these wonderful pastimes to attract us to Brahman. And then when we leave this material world, then we merge into the effulgence of Brahma Jyoti. And that's the original and natural state of the spiritual nature. And Krishna's pastimes are kind of temporary leela of Brahman to attract us. So that's even more dangerous than to say Krishna has a material body, because it seems more reasonable, more attractive to devotees. But the end result is that if you take up this philosophy, you're heading to a destination where, yes, the same problem that we talk about, mayavadi realization. There's no opportunity for devotional service. There's no chance for the soul to manifest its innate personal nature, desire, have its deepest personal desires satisfied in association, relationship with the Lord. There's no possibility. So actually this becomes even greater cheating. You see? So all these other Puranas and Vedic literatures where personality of Godhead may be argued, there's still the danger of mayavadi trickery entering. I want to, since this question has come up, I want to read you something. This is from Sri Brahma Samhita of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. This is the very last purport. Now, this is of course difficult language, but don't worry, I will pause and try to explain to you what's being said, because this really drives home the point that I'm making. So he begins, this is the purport to text 62. This is the point, this verse 62 is the point at which Lord Brahma is actually Lord Krishna is actually empowering Brahma. That means that he's giving him the power to create. That means also he's giving him the power to understand the Srimad Bhagavatam. He's giving him the Chatushloki. All of this is happening. So then in purport, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur writes, certain thinkers conclude that the non-differentiated Brahman is the ultimate entity, and by undergoing self-delusion, Vivarta, exhibits the consciousness of differentiation. So this is this Vivartavad, this is the classical Shankara position, Shankaracharya's position. That actually we're all Brahman, but due to Vivarta, Brahman coming under illusion, which means Maya is more powerful than Brahman, now we think we're no longer all one. When it is limited, it is a phenomenal world, and is itself the Brahman in its unlimited position. Or the Brahman is the substance and this phenomenal world is the reflection, or everything is an illusion of the jiva. So the second point is, when it is limited, is the phenomenal world and is itself the Brahman in its unlimited position. This is actually like the Shaktavadis. They're actually seeing no difference between material nature and Brahman at all. They're just saying that this material nature is, as this material world as we're experiencing, it is the Shakti under limitation. And when the Shakti becomes, the same nature becomes unlimited, then it is properly addressed as Brahman. So this is the Shakta philosophy, actually. And then, what is the next point? Or, Brahman is the substance and this phenomenal world is the reflection. This is another, I believe this is one of the schools, because you'd be amazed, Shankaracharya can teach oneness. So you'd be amazed out of the doctrine of oneness, how many varieties of Mayavadi philosophy have sprung forth. And this is one of them. This is one of the varieties. Yes.
For the previous thing, I have a question. Is a Christian religion actually comes under the previous one? That they think that by when there's like a day of liberation or whatever, then they're going to be the same, but they're going to enjoy the spiritual nature.
That's a good point. That's a fact. Yeah. Yes, actually, philosophically, I mean, we'll go off the track but if we get into this, but I've actually read that this, when they were forming their philosophy, the philosophy of Christianity was, or theology of Christianity was mainly formed in Greece, because there was already philosophy in Greece. So the Christians had to oppose the pre-existing Greek philosophies, in which there was also reincarnation, in which there was a Plato and Socrates, clear distinction between matter and spirit. So then the Christians were saying, actually, matter itself is glorified when you become a Christian, and yes, the dead body is raised at the time of judgment. Then you get a glorified material body. And that's why for, I think, nearly 1,000 years, there were debates in the Christian church, very serious debates about how old that body would be. Because say if you died at 95 years old, so would the body be raised at, looking at age 95, you'd go to heaven in an eternally 95-year-old body and walk around toothless and bent over? Or if you were a baby when you died, would you just be an infant in heaven and just crying? See, for all eternity. So then,
no bugs will bite.
So then it was finally decided at some council that everyone would be revived at age 35. So everyone in heaven is 35 years old.
Why 35?
This is serious Christian theology. I'm not making it up.
Bring us at the time. Bring us at the time.
Anyway, so yeah. Well, we want to move on. So everything is illusion of a jiva. That's another variety of Mayavadi philosophy. That there is no nothing else except the jiva. The jiva is Brahman, but we're an illusion. We're projecting this illusion of, we've created this material world ourselves, in other words. This is in Western philosophy called solipsism. That only I exist. The only real being in this world is me, and you're all my imagination. You see? I'm just imagining this.
So which is the one that's the, which is, who's the one?
Because yeah, that's, one, well, that's what they have to figure, fight that one out. That's what, you can see unlimited opportunity for debate there. So here, in these first four, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is clearly speaking of different forms of Mayavadi philosophy. But then he goes on to say, something that Godhead is evidently a separate entity, jiva is another different entity, and the phenomenal world, although it is a singular principle, exists separately as an internal independent entity. Now I believe there he's speaking of Dvaitavad. So that's Vaishnava philosophy. Then he goes on to say, or Godhead is a substantive entity and all other entities as chit and achit attributes are one in principle. So this is Vashishta Dvaita. Some suppose that by the force of inconceivable potency, sometimes the monistic and sometimes the dualistic principle is realized as truth. This is the Dvaita of the Nimvarkas. Some again arrive at the conclusion that the theory of the non-dual minus all potency is meaningless, whence the Brahman is the one eternally unalloyed entity vested with the pure potency. So this is Shuddha Dvaita. Then he goes on to say, so we have four kinds of Mayavadi philosophies, four kinds of Vaishnava philosophy. Now you might expect in the next sentence, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur as Vaishnava is going to say, the first four are all nonsense, but the second four are our allies. But what he says is, these speculations have originated from the Veda, relying on the support of the Vedanta Sutra. Relying on the, and this is just what Narada specifically said. That the he told Vyasadeva that in your most advanced work of philosophy, the Brahma Sutras, you have not actually gone beyond impersonal Brahman. Because in other words, there are still arguments, all these arguments going on from these different points of view. And finally, as a result of these arguments, you see the Mayavadis remain. Because the Vaishnavas are also quarreling among themselves. You see? So, this is what Mayavadis do. You see? They point out, well, they can't agree, but at least we say everything's one. You see? So it's easiest to agree with us. Because with us, you'll find no argument. Of course, that's not true either, as we've heard. They also have their own different schools. But as long as there's arguing going on among the Vaishnavas, there will always be Mayavadis to take advantage of it. You see? And then he ends where he's restating what Brahma says in the purport. In Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's purport, he's sort of restating the verse. And so here's what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says. Brahma is meaning to say in this verse 62, by discarding all these speculations, all eight of them, for Mayavadi positions and for Vaishnava positions, you and your bona fide community should adopt the ultimate principle identical with the doctrine of Achincha Beda Beda Tattva. Inconceivable simultaneous distinction and non-difference. This will make you eligible for being a true devotee. You see? This means Krishna Bhakti. And this is the philosophy of Brahma Samhita, which was revealed to Lord Brahma at the same time that Chatushloki was revealed. So this is the philosophy of the Srimad Bhagavatam also, Achincha Beda Abeda Tattva. And so part and parcel of this, of course, this is philosophy, but the, we can say the, shall we say, if we take philosophy to be abstract, you see, abstract, hard to understand, because it requires so much of the intellect, and the pastime to be the, shall we use the word, concrete, not in the sense of being material, but concrete in the sense of there is, you know, it's easier to understand. It's substance. We can get a grip on it. Then the pastimes of Krishna are simply displaying the meaning of Achincha Beda Beda Tattva philosophy. You see, and so therefore oneness and difference, because the Lord becomes subordinate to his devotee. So the Lord is always the Lord, but what do you say when some cowherd boy, when he's having to carry some cowherd boy, Sudam, on his shoulders, because Sudam has wrestled him down to the ground, applied the ikkyo and nikkyo, aikido moves on him, pinned him so he can't move. Krishna's tapped the ground three times, as they do. And now he has to carry Sudam around on his shoulders. So who's supreme in that case? You see? If you ask Krishna, who's the strongest, what do you think he'll answer? Do you think he'll, throw Sudan off his shoulders? I'm the strongest, of course. I'm God around here. No, he's going to actually say, Sudan is stronger than me, and he's going to really mean it. Because that is the Leela of Goloka Vrindavan. And therefore, you can only, you know, only by Achincha Beda Beda Tattva can you enter into this. Can you actually understand what's going on? Because if you don't have this, if you don't accept this philosophy, then you're just going to lose it, you see. Then you're going to, this is what happens to the sahajyas. Because the sahajyas, they make up stories, you know, they made up the story about, what is it, Jiva Goswami composing a work, and he showed it to one of the other Goswamis who was a real rasika, meaning a sahajya, to either Rupa or Sanatan, who were the seniors among the Goswamis. And so they looked at Jiva's, all this philosophy, all this stuff that you know, break, make smoke come out of the ears because it's so difficult. So, like you were, like Maharaj was saying, so grammatically, intricately, following every point. And so, Rupa, I don't quite, it's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, I believe, in a purport. So it was either Rupa or Sanatan Goswami. They just threw the book down a well. And Jiva Goswami began to cry. Oh, my great work of philosophy has been rejected. Because according to the Sahajyas, when you really reach love of God, then there's no need. There's philosophy gets in the way. And you should simply, what does the word Sahaja mean? You should know.
Easy
or natural. You see? Then it's just natural. Whatever you feel. You see? Oh, Prabhu, I think Krishna wants me to sleep until 10 o'clock this morning. So I think that's today's Leela, so. They lose all conception of devotional service. Krishna is just one of us, you see. And then I could get into some of the more nasty aspects of what the sahajas do. Prabhupada wouldn't talk about these things openly. But these things are going on, these nasty things are going on under the argument that actually every male is Krishna and every female is actually Radharani. You see? There's actually no difference between us and Krishna. That what Krishna is simply maleness. And what Radharani is simply femininity. And if you want to experience the rasa, then the males and females should get together for sensual pleasure. And then they have their techniques for, you know, increasing that pleasure to some point where they say, now it's prema. But it's just sex life, mature. Prakriti rasa, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati would call it. So this is what happens when you try to enter Krishna's pastimes without this philosophy of achincha beda beda tattva. Either you become like, you know, or on the spiritual side of not being able to accept this philosophy, you have Goddess Lakshmi who wanted to be a gopi. But she's so much, I mean, her identity is in a, her very identity, spiritual identity is the manifestation of Aishwarya Bhav. It's just, you know, that's what she is. She is Aishwarya Bhav. You know this term. Aishwarya means the mood of service to the Lord. It doesn't go beyond dasyam. Servitude in opulence. Like they say, the King of Kings. You find that in Christianity. The Kingdom of God. So God is King. He's full of opulence and we are His tiny little servants. And actually, you see, then that gets into, well, if He's the King, then the King, you see, when He's going to bless us, He never blesses a citizen with himself. You see, is that a blessing? A powerful king, you see, all-powerful king who can have your head cut off just by raising his eyebrow and a glance, you see, meaningfully at his, the captain of his guards just glances over and the captain knows what to do, pulls out his sword, and off comes the head. And the king says, I'm going to give you the greatest benediction. I'm going to move into your house and live with you. Then it's time for the shaking knees. You see? We'd be very afraid if such a powerful person would come and live in our house, because anything we might do in the house could displease him. And then he raises his eyebrows or glances over at the captain of the guards, and off comes our head. So that's that Aishwarya mood, you see. There's, like Christians, again, they speak of fearing God, the importance, we must fear God. So Krishna actually declares, he's cited in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, that this kind of devotion does not attract him, does not attract his attention, does not captivate him. They're just looking for a reward. So Lakshmi Devi, she could understand that these gopis are more fortunate than her, because she's in Svakya Parikrama. So she's the Lord's wife, Svakya, and in Vaikuntha. So it's practically a state of being in, she's in a state practically of awe and reverence of her Lord. And then she sees the gopis are behaving so freely with Krishna. So she wanted to become a gopi. So how did she go about and do it? She went about it just the way even the personalist yogis who want to achieve Vaikuntha do it. She sat down, performed austerities, did yoga. You see? Even the personalist yogis, when they're mukshavas, they want liberation, but they understand there are five kinds of liberation. And only one of these five is the sayujya, impersonal. Four are personal. Five kinds of liberations, which the Gaudiyas, we find Lord Krishna telling Durvasa Muni. You see, this is what I say, only in Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Krishna tells Durvasa Muni very clearly, my real devotees, because this is what Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati says, you can become a real devotee by accepting a Chinchabeda Beda Tattva philosophy. And that's where the Lord tells Durvasa Muni, my real devotees reject the five kinds of liberation. But four of them are personal. But the real devotees don't want liberation. Because liberation is still putting your needs first. You see? I have to make sure I'm safe. So everything's okay here. You see? And that's why the Aishwarya Bhav is so attractive to them. Because, you know, there's certainly no want here. You see? I mean, even the palace walls are made out of jewels. If ever I need any kind of jewel, they just break a piece off and there it is. Anything I need will be immediately fulfilled. But that's harder to see in Goloka Vrindavan, because Goloka Vrindavan looks, of course, for the devotees who know that every tree is a Kalpa Viksha tree, but that's only for the devotees who know that those trees are Kalpa Viksha trees just for serving Krishna, not for serving our senses. You see? So there's still, see, even in Vaikuntha, there's a bit of a touch of spiritual self-interest. You see, in that, yes, I'm safe. I'm safe. I'm on the same planet as the Lord. Nothing can happen to me. Whew, finally made it. See, I've got the same form as the Lord. Wow, that's great. You see, so all of that, you see, so... therefore, Lakshmi, you see, there is a place in the Lakshmi Van in Vrindavan where it is said, still today, after so many millions and millions of years, she's still doing that. She's still trying to become a gopi. But that's not the right Bhav, you see, the Aishwarya Bhav. And she can't become anything else than Lakshmi. So this is... Actually, this is all a lesson for us, that as long as we cling to this Aishwarya mood, then we will never achieve the actual pure prema bhakti, which is intimacy with Krishna, which is where Krishna is no longer God. And you see it only in the Srimad Bhagavatam 10th canto. Look at Krishna book, the devotees, sometimes Krishna does something so wonderful, the devotees pause and reflect, I wonder who he really, you think he might be a demigod? And then you know, maybe he's Indra, maybe he's Lord Shiva. And then Nanda Maharaj will say, I don't care if he's Lord Narayan, he's my son. So I have to raise him, I have to take care of him. You see, that's the conviction. Even if he's Lord Narayan, which he is, Prabhupada says he's the original Vishnu. But they don't care, they're not thinking like that. Yes?
I have one more question. In the 8th verse, is telling the sins for following the path of Niriti Marga. The sins for following the path of Niriti Marga. This is the best is telling from Narada Muni, no? But after is telling Niriti Marga was condemned by Narada.
I couldn't hear at all. Did anyone hear that question?
Praviti Marg was scolded by Narad Muni.
That?
Praviti Marg is scolded by Narad Muni.
Praviti.
Scolded.
Yeah.
And she wants to know what scolded means?
Scolded means criticize.
Yeah, criticize. The scold means to chastise. Because praviti means that you are following the path of sense enjoyment for attaining further sense enjoyment. While nivriti means you're giving up sense enjoyment to attain to transcendence. So his point is that he gives naishkarmi, which means you perform the activities that would be on the platform of praviti, but they are done with the mentality of nivriti in devotion. So it's the same as the Gita.
Nivriti Marga is just the contrary.
Nivriti is means that you're performing your prescribed duties without desire for fruitive result. That will give you liberation, but that's not enough. It has to go to the point of devotion. That's why Krishna always says, perform your activity without in knowledge, without attachment, that's all nivriti. Then remembering me and for me, that's devotion.
I have a question on what Maharaj explained about Krishna. I heard the Parivasa Sutra of Bhagavatam is Ite Chamsakalapusha, that would not explain the Christmas of the Bhagavatam. We have another suggestion of a verse which is the Parivasa Sutra of
Bhagavatam. What? What, you're talking about one verse that expresses the whole sense of the Bhagavatam?
That kind of, yeah, just the...
Well...
The four Chatushloki?
Chatushloki is expressing Chinchaveda Veda Tattva.
There
are different, you see, and you were talking about... we're reading in a purport from the second canto where Prabhupada is saying the Srimad Bhagavatam is all about these. There were two verses. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
You see, there are actually many such verses. You have to look carefully in the purports.
So
the acharyas, sometimes they'll point this verse is the essence of, you see. So this is a question of research. I mean, please don't ask me to give... I'm not an acharya, so.
Essence isn't limited. That's the thing. So, generally, if you see the other literatures, the presentation is very, very much more. How would you say? It's like more simplified. The language used and everything is very nice. That was what was special about the Mahabharata. It was very poetic. Because the other Vedic literatures aren't that poetic. You know, they're made much more simple and more easy to catch. Mahabharata was poetic with so much, you know, metaphors and, you know, different kinds of ornamentation. But it didn't give that essence. But the Bhagavatam then is the most complex of, like, Sanskrit grammar and presentation. I was talking with one Madhva, who is expert at chanting verses. And I went with the ideas, okay, you have
you know, on the stoop, you know, eight syllables, so you chant it in this way, this one in this way, this one, you know, it has 11 like this, 12 like this, like this. He started pointing out and showing in the verses how half, the first half of the verse is in 1 meter, the second half is in another. And he was even giving the names of them, because he used to chant Bhagavatam. He says there's at least 500 main meters used in Bhagavatam, but they only talk about 18 meters. So it's just like the Bhagavatam essence is essence. Now if you have one verse, you have many, so most of them have one verse, it's easy, then you bring everything around that verse, you see it. But here it's a concept. The essence is the Paribhasya, I would take, is a concept. And so all these different verses, actually everything, probably Jiva Goswami, I think Tattva Sandarbha, he mentions that every verse, every syllable is only about Krishna. They have the direct meaning, the indirect meaning, and the hidden meaning. He even takes the first verse, and I think to show that, give example, he takes the first verse of the Bhagavatam and explains it syllable by syllable and breaks it down and show how Janmadyasya Yata is talking about Krishna's born here, and he shows how he's born in the jail, then he's taken to here and then this, and how he kills all the demons and establishes Dwarka and Mathura and all these different things. Just by taking it syllable by syllable, he shows how the first verse is actually a delineation of the complete summary of Krishna's pastimes. So it's like Bhagavatam's just in another category. You know, that's why it says always Prabhupada makes it in his maturity he compiled. Maturity meaning in his realization, but also in his as the literary incarnation, it's the top literary manifestation.
All right, so we have to end again, and we ask everyone to come forward to pick up your study guides. Those who are enrolled students, either full-time. And, yeah, your essay question is here. You'll be thankful to know that this weekend's essay is very simple.